Hey everybody, we're here cancelling noise. It's the Noise Cancelling Podcast with two girls and two boys. Who's on the podcast today? Let's start with Cherie.
I am Cherielle Smith, editor-in-chief of Laptop Mag.
And I'm Samuel Roberts, senior entertainment editor of Tech Radar. Sorry, Gareth, I thought you were going to say Samuel. Now you introduce yourself.
No, I just need to see who is first on the list. There you go.
Hi, I'm Olivia Tambini. I'm the audio and music editor at Tech Radar.
And becoming quite a regular feature on this podcast. Very lovely to have you again, Olivia. And I'm Gareth Beavis, global editor-in-chief of Tech Radar. And I mean, as you've all heard, quite good at singing, clearly. So you're welcome, listeners. Samuel, lovely to have you on. How are you?
Thank you for having me, Gareth. I'm very good, thank you. Yes, looking forward to the end of the year. Not to date this podcast too much.
I mean, yeah, straight away, we date these heavily, like by the minute sometimes. Often things come in and we just talk about like, it's happening right now, we're recording, get behind the curtain. Very different thing. Olivia, you're wearing some lovely headphones.
I am. I'm wearing the Apple AirPods Max currently because I'm testing them out at the moment.
Bit of a spoiler for what's going to happen later. But before we get into the big stuff this week, we've got two big questions this year. And I like this. So the first one is, what's the best tech-based Christmas present you ever received? And secondly, what techie Christmas present do you want this year? The answer will be nothing, because surely we should all have what we want. Cherie, start us off.
The best I ever got was my first laptop. It wasn't a great laptop, but it was a Toshiba. So there's that. It lasted about 5 years. So I can't even complain about it. What I want, the techie gift I want for Christmas, actually, you know what? It's that smart pressure cooker. IQ Chef, I think it's called.
Okay. Any reason? Or just, you know, you just got space in your kitchen?
I've got space for my kitchen. I want to experiment with pressure cooking. And it looks really, really dope. And it's actually sitting in my Amazon cart waiting for me to pull the trigger right now.
I've got a buffet. I haven't done my Amazon presents. Oh, no. I better do that right after this pod because I'm going to miss the delivery.
You can do it during the podcast, Gareth, and we'll talk you through it step by step. I was like, no, that won't make a good gift. That'll make a good gift. I think that'd be great. Great listening.
But then we'll know what Gareth's getting us for Christmas, and that'll be awkward.
Yeah, that's true.
That is true. Yeah, exactly. Because it is all coal. Samuel, what about you?
So the best tech Xmas gift I ever received was a PS2 in Christmas 2001. My parents got it for me with 007 Agent Under Fire, a bad PS2 game, first-person shooter. And I later managed to trick my dad into buying me Grand Theft Auto 3 when I was 13. He should be in jail by now, really. The fact that he's still loose is unbelievable.
Is that related to the game, just to be clear?
Well, just buying the game when it was rated 18 in the UK, basically.
But I wasn't checking it was like on the run from something else.
You were just not as far as I know.
Dead or alive.
In terms of a techie Christmas present I want this year, I really want someone to buy me an N64. I've decided that this year, instead of going to restaurants, I just buy old games for old games consoles.
Makes sense.
And that's my way of like emotionally dealing with 2020. So if someone could buy me an N64, that'd be fantastic.
Okay. Olivia Tambini.
So my favorite tech Christmas present was a little TV, a really, really tiny one. I don't remember kind. Well, you know, like
14 inch.
Yeah, something like that. I don't remember the model, but it meant I could watch TV in my bedroom for the first time. And I used to wake up on a Saturday morning and watch Friends. So that was great.
How old are you at this point?
10, I think.
There are some themes in Friends that 10-year-olds would be confused by, even the pre-Watershed versions.
I just thought Jerry was funny, I think, at the time. Anyway, what I would like this year, and I'm definitely not going to get, is Bang & Olufsen have refurbished the Beogram 4000C turntable. And it was released originally in the 1970s, and they've just done 95 copies for their 95th anniversary. And it's just the most beautiful turntable I've ever seen.
Oh, I feel like I'm now judging you for not getting it in on a professional level and finding a way to experience this.
I mean, even
95 is hard to get a hold of, in fairness.
I mean, having spoken with the company, even the CEO doesn't have one. That's how rare they are.
Wow. So.
I feel like, I like the fact it sounds like he's phoned the CEO and you said, have you got one? He's like, not even me, Liv. Not even me.
I will get one eventually.
Yeah. It's like Liam Neeson style. Like, I will get you. Samuel's confused me a little bit because I was torn between the N64 that I got as a Christmas present one year and... But I think my actual answer will be the Nintendo Entertainment System I got when I was 7. Because whenever I think of our best Christmas present ever, it was that one. Like, just... And what's funny is the N64, I was desperate for that when it came out. I was a bit older as a teenager, but I was desperate for it. My parents told me I wasn't going to get it. Even told me off for buying the N64 magazine because all my friends are buying, because they were going to get it for Christmas. I wasn't going to get one. And they got genuinely annoyed at me. They said, you shouldn't get your sister excited about something like this because it's not going to happen. And then got one for me. So I was like, I can't work out whether I'm impressed by the long game they're playing or whether they were just messing with me. Both mum and dad listen to this podcast now, so probably get an email about that. They don't email me, they text me. But the NES, I played it a couple of times in a shop. I played Duck Hunt with a laser gun or the light gun, and I really loved it, but I didn't think I was going to get one for Christmas. I got it, and it just changed my life. You know, a games console in your happy home. Brilliant.
And you never stopped hunting ducks, did you, Gareth? That continues to this day.
I mean, the metaphor of that, yeah, absolutely. I never want to like actually shoot a duck, but the goals that gave me drive me on in my career every day. What is a duck? Is it traffic? There we go. What I want this year, I have no idea. Like, I can't even think of presents that I want, just full stop. I find it in a horrible way, really difficult when people ask me and I get annoyed at them for like, giving me hassle of like having to think of things that I want. And then later on, I'm like, oh, I wish I'd asked for that because I actually did want something. But I've got no idea like what I'd want. Because like I said, most of the stuff that we want, we get to play with and test out. And that's kind of the beauty of this role. So I would just say boringly, the Garmin 4 and a 945, because I think it's the best running watch out there. But my God, that is a dull answer. Even I'm sad about saying it. So yeah. So I'm going to ignore that. There probably is something good out there, but I can't think what it is. A short throw projector. I don't know which one the best one is right now, but I love those little things. Yeah, the idea of not having to put it on behind a wall, it just shoots up into the big wall in front of you. That would be lovely. That. But I'm not going to give myself any points for that, and I'm going to go for... I think it's going to have to be Liv with the TV just. But Samuel made a very good, strong case for... Actually, Liv, I'm going to be a dick. I'm taking it away from you. I'm giving it to Sam because both his answers are too good.
This is an outrage.
Wow. Yeah. His two answers dovetail together so well. Actually, it was a more comprehensive answer. The TV was the strongest single, but as a combo, Samuel takes it.
I included a mini narrative about my dad going on the run from the law as well, which I feel like brings it some real, you know, flavour.
Yeah, but I watch TV in bed. What's more interesting than that?
Yeah, but I feel like you do that now.
Yeah, I do.
So you're still living your best life.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, we covered that. Well done, us. What's going on this week? We've already led with it, but Olivia, you are reviewing the AirPods Max. I mean, $550 for a pair of headphones. What?
Yeah, they are really, really expensive. I don't want to give away any spoilers for our full review, so I'm not going to say whether they're worth the money yet. But I will say that they do sound really, really good, surprisingly good, and the noise cancellation is also spot on. So yeah, we'll see.
So the noise cancellation is an interesting one, because I think that's something that I've seen both you and other people talk about as being amazing. I mean, what for me, noise cancelling seems to be fairly binary, so what makes it that much better for you in these situations?
I think it's just going off where I've been testing them. So like, I've tested them like in my kitchen with like the washing machine on full, and also commuting, which is a bit more, you know, the kind of thing people do when they're wearing these headphones. And it's just the amount of environmental noise that they're able to block out is insane. And, you know, if you've got your music playing, you really don't hear anything at all. They also come with a transparency mode, which means you can let some environmental noise pass through the headphones if you need to like be aware for, I don't know, like travel announcements or something, which is really handy. It's just an easy to use system. Like, a lot of headphones come with lots of different noise cancellation settings, you know, on a scale from like 1 to 10, whereas these are just kind of, you know, always on and always working.
Cool. You've answered that very well.
Thanks.
Yeah, I suppose the price is obviously there. And also, I think this podcast will be going out at the same time as the reviews goes live, just to point out massively behind the curtain again, straight away, there it goes. But do you feel like the physical controls on them, which basically a Apple Watch jammed into the side of them with a digital crown and a button, do you feel like that works, or do you hanker for a touch panel?
No, I really, really like the controls on the AirPods Max, mainly because I feel like touch panels on headphones are a bit hit and miss at the moment. I don't think the technology has been perfected to the point where it's always going to work reliably. And I feel like Apple as a company, it's never really like an early adopter to things which haven't been proven to work. So it makes sense that they've used these dials. And also the fact that it has got a physical dial makes it feel like you can really precisely adjust the volume, which is nice if you're a bit of an audio geek.
That is nice. Cherie, we first bonded over a headphone lead that you lovingly gave me so I could listen to music on the flight back from the US to the UK. You obviously know headphones inside and out. Do you care about these anymore now you've seen stuff?
I care because of the price. Like, Apple is making a very bold gambit, pricing them the way that they are. Once we start talking about 500 headphones over 500, I think that you are a reference or studio grade laptop. I think that you're open back. I think that you have the best drivers, either planar or neodymium. I think of vacuum tubes and preamps and all of this fancy equipment. So to know that these are just for a pair of noise canceling headphones, albeit from Apple, I am very curious to see if they actually do live up to the price, because at this point, before any reviews come out, the gold standard for noise canceling as it pertains to on or over ears are, of course, Bose with WH-1000 XM4 being a very close second. So those are the reigning kings of the active noise canceling over an on-ear headphone universe. So to price your headphones at least $300, $300 to $200 more than both of those leading systems is very, very bold. And it makes me wonder who exactly these headphones are for.
And who are they for?
I'm not sure yet. I haven't got my hands on a pair yet. That price tag just excludes a lot of people from the usual music lover gambit. I mean, I love a colorful pair of headphones and I like the colors that Apple are throwing down, but I don't know how many, what do I know? Because right now, if you're trying to buy them, they're saying that you can't, you have a 3 to 4 month wait. So maybe it is a headphone for everybody. And Apple is raising the bar for headphone companies, because before, if you said, oh, well, it's $550, no one's buying that. But because it's Apple, people are opening their wallets. So who knows? This might lead to a renaissance in premium headphones.
Let's test. Samuel, would you buy these headphones? Do you own any Apple headphones?
Only the ones that came with my iPod in about 2009. I think they still make the journey with me whenever I move house. I don't think I've spent more than £50 on headphones. I have spent more than £100 on a headset, but I can't see myself ever investing in that, no. But I know, I'm aware that there are entire groups of people who do want that premium quality and feel, and some people who will buy everything that Apple makes. So it's tricky.
Well, would you maybe not buy a pair of headphones, but would you subscribe to a service that helps you get fit with Apple?
I feel like all I would be doing is paying Apple to guilt me for the lack of exercise that I do.
Yes.
And that is a free service that I provide myself.
That is the most beautiful segue of all time, because I've been testing out Apple Fitness Plus, and my biggest worry is that I am just going to end up with shame for not using it all the time right now, because for those that haven't heard about Apple Fitness Plus, it's primarily designed for watch users. So people who've got an Apple Watch, they get a month free or 3 months free if they buy a watch now. And it's this, I don't know, if you've ever been to a gym that has classes that you sign up for, you book into or whatever, but it's spin classes or treadmill or HIIT or yoga or anything like that. It's basically that being brought to your TV, iPad, iPhone. And it interacts with the watch and it will show your metrics in the corner. So you've got your heart rate, your calorie burn. It will show you how far ahead or behind you are of the average effort that people are putting in for that kind of thing. And it has all these very Instagrammable trainers who have their own profiles and personalities, and they're very joyous and energetic about everything. And there's lots of music associated with every workout. I'm saying these things in quite a condescending tone, but that's only because I'm British. And energy and happiness don't go well with my sensibilities. But the idea of it is interesting because it's, you know, $79 a year. I think it's $9.99 a month. And I was trying it this morning for the first time. I watched a workout last night because I didn't have time to do one / the inclination. So I watched to see what it was like. And it's just without that kind of, you know, those apps that give you like a program to follow to make you feel better, to give you some sense of progression. It's just a case of like you could book in down a gym and you've got to bring it up yourself. I find that quite difficult. So I feel like I'm trying to make a better point about Apple Fitness Plus rather than just like it allows you to jump around a bit. But it does, and it's quite cool when it works. But ultimately, I don't know if I'll keep going with it because they're not telling me to do it enough. And I need someone to shout at me to be like, oi, do this workout. You need to do it, otherwise you're letting everyone down. And I need that shame in my life.
Is the fact that you have to pay for it like not enough to make you do it? Because like, I've recently signed up to a fitness subscription service. And the reason I've done it instead of just looking at workout videos on YouTube is because I know I have to pay. And if I don't do the workout, I've paid for literally nothing.
True. But I mean, this is especially with this one, you get a one-time payment for make it cheaper, or you could do it monthly. But I mean, how many people out there have got gym subscriptions or memberships they don't actually use because they're like, oh, well, I'm kind of used to it coming out of my account now, and I will use it at some point, but you know, I haven't. And what's the reason to do it? That's why.
What's the solution then, Gareth? How do they make this a more compelling proposition to you? Does somebody need to call your house and say, go for a run, asshole?
Well, I mean, talking about the gym membership, I ended up going for runs outside all the time because I got more into that kind of running and just using the gym for a shower. It was over the road from our offices, but then I found out about 6 months after doing that our offices actually had showers. And so I'd wasted about £300 for literally nothing. So well done me for that. The solution, there's a boring solution, which is like, it would be great if you could like sign up to one of the fitness instructors that you like, because people do that in real life in gyms. They'll go for a trainer that they like, you know, they like their energy, they like the way they put the sessions together, and they'll just do whatever they do. So they could just do whenever that person brings in a new session each week, I'll put it in my calendar and I'll do it and I'll find some time for it. That would work. Or, and I keep saying this about Apple, I just get on board with this fitness train. People want to be told what to do. They want personal trainers on their phone. They want that kind of autonomy that they necessarily don't have themselves to go like, this is how you get fit. Can you do this? And like, yeah, I can do that. Thanks. And you do it and you feel good. And then the next one comes up and you do that again. And it makes you feel happy. I don't get why Apple doesn't want to do that, but that would be the thing that makes me do it. But equally, I think the Fitness Plus is quite cool. Like the first one this morning, that little burn bar that tells you to how far ahead behind you are. The second I started to fall backwards, instantly 10% more effort. Straight away, just like, can I get that back up again? Yes, I can. And then I felt good about myself. So it definitely works. There are some good things. And I really like the fact that it syncs the watch data straight up to your TV screen, because it feels like you're playing a game, but just a really quite poor one.
That's what happens when analytics rewire your brain, Gareth.
What? I can't help it. You see things working.
Everything is analytics to you now, including yourself.
I mean, it was that way before Google Analytics worked, though. I love metrics. I love a proof that something goes in and then comes out again the right way. That's what you want to see in life.
Nerd.
Fine. Well, talking about nerd stuff, Disney's investor call. I mean, is there a better way to find out about the future of Star Wars, Samuel?
Yeah, so Disney last week had an investor day, which also doubled as a kind of live stream. It was like a kind of traditional investor call meets Comic-Con. It's like, what if an accountant came onto the stage in like Hall H and was like, you know, Thor? And it was quite a confusing mix tone-wise, but it was quite exciting. They did announce a whole host of stuff coming to Disney Plus, including 15 Disney animation, Disney live action and Pixar movies are coming in the next few years, and 80% of them will come first to Disney Plus. So on that front, it represents a huge transition from their existing kind of theatrical model, release a film in the cinema and then comes out. They're experimenting with a bunch of different stuff. So there's also going to be, like Mulan early this year, you'll be able to pay X amount of money extra on top of your subscription to access a film that's releasing in theaters day and date on Disney Plus. And I think they're really just throwing a lot of stuff at the wall and seeing what works. And there's a massive investment in Marvel and Star Wars too. There's going to be 10 Star Wars TV series and 10 Marvel TV series over the coming years. Most of them we know about now after the presentation. And yeah, basically, if Disney Plus has felt a bit light to you in this first year, and I think it definitely has, as good as The Mandalorian is, it was doing a lot of heavy lifting by itself. This really felt like the next phase of what they're going to try and do to keep customers excited about the service.
I mean, do you think the name is weird? Like, why call it the investor call? Like you said, the Comic-Con bit is the bit that sells it when you have those events. So why not make it so that it sounds a bit cooler, like the Star Wars reveal? I don't know, like something that gets people a bit more jazzed about it. It felt like by calling it an investor day that it was almost trying to like put it under the radar.
Yeah, it's complicated. I think it sort of speaks to the lack of live events going on this year, you know, like a kind of San Diego Comic-Con where you could have this stuff out front and center, or a Star Wars Celebration where they would normally talk about these announcements. And so instead they kind of rolled it all into this, and it was kind of entertaining in places. They had a few trailers and stuff, but it was also very dry in places and ran for 4 hours, so it was quite a strange old mix of stuff. But yeah.
And it wasn't a good time for you either, physically, in terms of the hour of the day.
Oh, well, yeah, it was on US hours, so I stayed up late to watch it. But it was fine. There's some other interesting stuff in there too, like there's an Alien TV series in the works from Noah Hawley, the creator of the Fargo TV series. So that'll be pretty cool, I think. And the Star Wars TV shows, I thought, did sound really good. And even though they're kind of doubling down on IP, quote unquote, I would say that most people were quite excited by the range of announcements coming out of there. So I think it was a mission accomplished by Disney. But there's a bunch of other kind of different stuff going on that they kind of slid out quite subtly, like Disney Plus is getting a price bump in the US, I think in March next year, of $1 extra a month. And in territories like some countries in Europe and other places will be getting a new channel within Disney Plus called Star. And that will increase the price of the service, but you'll actually get to watch adult content on Disney Plus. And I think this is how they're compensating for not having Hulu outside the US. Hulu is obviously like a general entertainment offering. And we don't have that in the UK from Disney. So their version of it is rolling it into Disney Plus. Everyone pays extra for it, but you get a more well-rounded service. So yeah, quite a radical rethink of you know, just releasing kiddie cartoons and High School Musical every week.
So actually, I think Disney Plus is not kiddie friendly enough at the moment. Like, got a 6-year-old in my life, and I'm constantly trying to work out what kind of things are age appropriate for her. Like Home Alone, turns out not good for a 6-year-old at all. And I thought, you know, this is going to be a great Christmas film. And like, just, you know, the bit at the beginning of Home Alone where they're getting onto the taxis, and she turned to us and goes, "They don't leave them at home, do they?" And we were like, "Nope," turned it off straight away. Like, and you realise, like, I was like, they haven't even got to the point where the robbers are going to come and try and break in. And you're like, "Oh, okay,
I think that goes back to the era that you're raised in, like 80s babies. Like, no one cared about our well-being. Like, you had movies like The Black Cauldron, E.T. was kind of terrifying. No one cared about our well-being or our mental health. I remember watching The Toxic Avenger,
that still messes me up now. He fell into toxic waste. It's like RoboCop, but for kids. It's awful.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Toxic Avenger because it is made in Jersey, so Jersey strong. And B, like that thing was like, watching it now, I'm like, oh my god, no one stopped me from watching this. Like, my, like, folks were just like, you're good, you'll survive this mental scarring. I've watched a few Cronenberg movies when I was when I was way too young to watch them. And you know, like, the level of like, hey, kids bounce that prior generations had, it like is just astounding nowadays. Like nowadays, I would never think. I'm like, oh, maybe I don't want my niece watching this. But for me, it was like, yeah, nah, this is fine. It's cool.
I have to know which Cronenberg films you watched as a kid. Like, don't say Crash.
No, Jesus Christ. Videodrome, of course. Like, just like, didn't really understand what was going on. Just weirded the heck out. Things like Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Well, that's not a Cronenberg, but just like all those just really wild body horror movies, Existence, and
those weren't bad, just children's films though.
And the Reanimator films, like just nothing a child my age had any business watching. 8976 Evil, just like, or even there's this late 80s early 90s Batman animated series, that episode where Clayface becomes Clayface and they feed him that chemical, and he's like, and you just see a silhouette of him just kind of choking to death, like, not like this, not like, scarred for life.
We have got niche, Cherie. I feel like we really like uncovered a seam in your psyche that needs to be released for a while.
So we need to add The Fly to Disney Plus. That's what you're saying, right?
I am, you know what? I am very curious to see what Disney is going to do with Aliens.
But it's an adult thing. That's the point. So it's a different genre completely, right? You can be what you want with it.
Can you? Like, Disney only lets you go so far. Like, so I think I think it's very interesting that they're going with such a hard R of a franchise. So I'm very curious to see if they're going to let it stay a hard R, or if they're just going to, there's going to be a lot of off-scene kill shots and maybe a lot of gross out shots instead of, well, no, the xenomorph is punching a hole through that person's body with his secondary mouth. Or, oh no, someone's leg is getting melted off with acid. We shall see, I guess.
Liv, what scarred you the most as a child? Just in general.
Everything. no, I think a lot of the Roald Dahl adaptations, so like the original
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Willy Wonka, there's that like horrible up. Scene with the when they're on the boat, and there's all the hallucinations.
And the man's getting his teeth chopped out with a hammer or something like that. Yeah. Like, what is that?
It's horrible. Then there's things like Matilda, and you've got Miss Trunchbull, and she locks them in the spiky cage,
the
and
chokey.
The witches with, you know, they pull off their faces.
Oh my god, that was the best scene. I guess I was desensitized by that. Like, yeah.
I think those are scary, but I mean, the books themselves were kind of scary, and I loved them as a kid. But I think, like, probably what's more damaging was, like, and I love Disney. I love Disney films. I watch them all the time. But, like, the way, like, Disney princesses were portrayed, like, I was watching The Little Mermaid recently, and I didn't realise until now how problematic it is that, you know, she gives up everything to be with this man, changes everything about herself and doesn't talk, and it's all fine.
Well, I mean, as you get older, watching some of those films is just interesting. As a kid, I rented Little Mermaid every weekend for like 10 weeks. And now watching it, I'm like, wait a minute. A, your father's right. You're way too young to talk about you're in love with someone 16-year-old young lady. Number two, oh, so you're just going to sell out the whole kingdom just for this dude you saw once? And you gave him some mouth-to-mouth, so I guess you're qualifying that as your first kiss? Girl, you just for the streets. Out here for the streets.
And also, like, at the end, King Titan goes, yeah, you can go and do that. I feel like I'm now judging him for, like, just how much I'm going to miss her. No,
yeah!
Just how much he's going to hate me for not saying no to this, again, because it's the right thing to do.
It's really bad parenting.
It is bad parenting.
But like Ariel continues that bad parenting because in the subsequent movie where she has her own daughter, she doesn't tell her anything about, hey, I'm a mermaid. She just keeps her daughter away from the water. Like, do not go near the water. Like, it's a whole thing. It's like, oh man, this is bad parenting. This is not good.
So would you count bad parenting as letting your child play Cyberpunk, for instance, Samuel?
Yes, that would be bad parenting. And that includes kids who are like 25 or older. I still think that would be bad parenting. Yeah, is that your transition, Gareth, to a different subject? Not to kind of go too granular about the
Don't show people about the clever pathways that I'm crossing.
Yeah, so Cyberpunk 2077 has launched after being in development for around 8 years, I think, on and off. I think it's only really been a full development since The Witcher 3 DLC ended a few years ago. But it's launched on PS4, Xbox One, and PC, and Google Stadia. I almost forgot that last one. I wonder why. And so it's a bit of a buggy game at launch. I've played about 4 hours of it, but we've got a review on Tech Radar that people can read. And it's definitely feels a bit unfinished on PC where I'm playing it with like a pretty good graphics card, pretty good PC. It's quite rough in terms of performance, but on consoles it's apparently even worse. And so I've been watching a few videos of this, and the frame rate's really bad, and the game looks kind of murky, and it just doesn't look like a finished console version. This has led to quite a big backlash, where the developer CD Projekt Red has vowed to fix the current gen versions of the game. Reportedly, the game works a bit better on next gen consoles when using backwards compatibility. But the issue is that obviously this game was always meant to release early this year, so there wouldn't have even been next generation consoles around when the game was supposed to come out. So I don't know what their plan was, just to hope that it went out into the world and that no one kind of got angry about it. But it seems like a bit of a misfire. They kind of say that they didn't give the console versions enough attention in the run-up because they were focused on next-gen and PC. But whatever way they try and explain it, it doesn't look good. And now they're kind of offering refunds for people who have bought it either digitally or physically.
They needed to push this back another year. Yes, we would have been upset, but not as upset as this. This is just layer upon layer of just ineptitude and disappointment and gnashing of teeth.
Yeah, a real mess for sure. It's also quite interesting because I feel like CD Projekt Red's always had a lot of credibility among the quote-unquote gamer sort of crowd, for better or worse. And that seems to have evaporated straight away now because people have really turned on the game. And they're kind of trying to salvage their reputation a little bit now. And I do think there is some real magic to that game underneath it all, but it's a very adolescent game at the same time. It's very gratuitous in a way that doesn't come across as like mature. It just comes across as, well, here's someone naked, and aren't you so impressed by this? And all the violence is really over the top. And I think tone-wise, it just struggles a little bit because in places it's quite heartfelt and the storytelling's really good. It's just a weird old mix of tones. A very strange game indeed.
Why is Cyberpunk so vaunted as a title? You know, I've seen it being talked about for so long. I've never played it myself. And I always feel like it has this kind of almost, I don't know, I don't think what the word could be, but it's sort of deified as this game that people are so excited about. It sits in that top pantheon. And what is it about it that makes it so like desirable for everybody, that makes them feel like if it's rubbish then their lives are over?
I feel like it's based on a tabletop RPG, but I don't think that's really part of it. It's because The Witcher 3 was such a beloved open world RPG. It was largely considered the best of its type of this last generation. So the idea of the same developers applying their expertise to this vast sci-fi setting was really exciting. And The Witcher 3 was noted for having really good quest design as well, really good writing and cool characters. But so that just led to anticipation kind of going through the roof. But also I think CD Projekt Red's been promoting it for too long and too hard. So in retrospect, I don't know if it was a good idea to have like Keanu Reeves come out on stage at E3 2019. Like, at what point are you just setting the hype levels too high for you to actually meet people's expectations? Then again, if the game was good, we probably wouldn't even be asking that. So it's tricky, you know?
I mean, Keanu Reeves, if you get the opportunity, just take him. You know, you don't say no to Keanu.
No. Are you suggesting we try and get him on this podcast, Gareth?
I mean, I think it's inevitable now, really.
Sure.
I've got many questions about many of his works. Not least The Matrix, obviously. But I've forgotten. Oh, The Man of Tai Chi, that was what it was. I've got questions about that film, which is excellent. And the final fight scene is still one of the most saddening moments of my life, not because of the content, but just because of the way it was handled.
I love that was your go-to second Keanu Reeves movie, not Speed or like...
I have no questions about those. They're perfectly happy with those.
Actually, they're because I hate romantic movies and I hate rom-coms, but there's one that I used to love when
Bill
I was
and Ted.
A kid. It was A Walk in the Clouds, like that Keanu Reeves movie. Just random Keanu Reeves romance movie. Like for some reason, I was just about this movie all the way.
I can't say I've seen it. Oh, yeah. Remember, is The Lake House another Keanu Reeves rom-com?
Yes. Sandra Bullock.
I don't think that's a rom-com. I think that's a rom-drom?
Or just rom. It's rom. Yeah.
It's got time travel in it, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But like, yeah, no, I didn't watch that because I typically don't.
I haven't seen it either.
But Walk in the Clouds, it was like right after World War II. Keanu's playing an American soldier, and this beautiful, mysterious Italian woman is, hey, could you come home with me and pretend to be my fiance? I forgot why, but like, yeah, she.
Because Keanu.
Apparently, and he goes back, and of course the family owns this beautiful villa on this Italian vineyard, and he like they slowly fall in love while doing this ruse, and he learns about life, love, and wine, and it was cheesy, super cheesy.
That reminds me a lot of Holiday in Handcuffs with Melissa Joan Hart and Mario Lopez, where she literally kidnaps a man because her parents want her to have a boyfriend for the holidays, and they live so far away from civilization that he can't really get away because he's handcuffed. It's a funny film.
I didn't even know it was possible to watch a theatrically released movie that starred Melissa Joan Hart. This is news to me.
Yeah,
I know,
what?
Right? Yeah, we mostly watched it because of the whole how come Mario Lopez doesn't age question, and then just accidentally got drawn into it because it was just such a bad premise, basically. Like, she's literally kidnapped a man, and I mean, spoiler, they fall in love. I don't know how, because that's just, I don't know, Stockholm syndrome, I think.
I mean, that's the same premise of Overboard.
Yes. Ah, oh, good film.
I don't know, watching it now like that, like
yeah, as I've said, I'm not sure I think I should say that anymore. I just, when I was younger, I really liked the Goldie Hawn films. I don't know why.
Yeah, like
Private Benjamin, brilliant too. House Sitter.
You're having intimate contact with someone who doesn't really know who they are.
Yeah, as you say that, not so
I
good.
I don't know.
But she is good in The Christmas Chronicles too, which I have just watched, so there's one for you. Liv, if you could pick Keanu Reeves in any film that he's not in, which one would you choose?
That's a really weird question.
But you'll answer it okay. Straight away. You watch.
All right. Beauty and the Beast, the live action.
What? What?
Belle.
I actually don't know, because actually it's a perfect film. I probably wouldn't recast anyone, but like maybe there could be like a new like perfect talking sidekick or something, like an animal or something.
First of all, that'd he'd be a great cool. candlestick. And secondly, it's the perfect film.
It is the perfect film. I literally watch it like probably four or five times a year. I sing the songs all the time, especially the Gaston song. I love it.
There's so much to unpack with that, but I haven't got time, unfortunately. Why the Gaston song? Just, I have to ask.
It's just a great song. Do you not know it?
I do know it. There is no one quite like Gaston.
Exactly. It's a great song.
Cool. Right, before we run out of time completely, we need to move on to the news blast. And Cherie, you're up for it this week, right?
Yep, apparently.
I mean, last week, Liv absolutely nailed it. She was,
yeah, that's not happening.
She was in the zone with 12. I thought it was brilliant. Right, so you know the rules. You've got 60 seconds to give you've got 60 seconds to give the listeners the flavour of as many news stories as possible, the only rules being you must not read out from a script, and you must make sure that each story has at least some level of explanation so people can understand what they've just heard. You can't just do the headlines. So you've got 60 seconds on the clock. Are you ready, Cherie?
Let's do it.
3, 2, 1, let's go.
Hey, remember when EA Play was supposed to come out for Xbox Game Pass? Yeah, that's not happening until next year, so keep waiting. Samsung is just giving us lots of foldables. How many foldables? 4. So you're going to get the Galaxy Z Fold and 3 other phones. Stay tuned for that, 2021. Okay, if you need this, you can now play your Spotify podcast through Amazon Echo speakers. Have at it, folks. Joanna Dark, 15 years later is making a return via the Game Awards trailer. Super excited for that. Samsung better have confirmed pen support for the S21 since they killed my beloved Galaxy Note. I am upset with you, Samsung. Among Us, you want to be sus? You want to be sus on your Nintendo Switch? Now's the time. It's available. Go get it. Apple Watch 7. I don't do Apple Watches, but apparently Touch ID is coming, and that's going to be a good thing for your fans.
Stop. You did 7.
That's not bad for me.
No, that is your second best after the 8 you got last time, but better than the 4 you got the first time. So
indeed.
I see there's a general upward curve on the line that they do, the correlation line, where it's called on graphs. Fun fact as well, that Joanna d'Arc is named after the French for Joan of Arc, Jeanne d'Arc.
Ah, today I learned.
I was well into Perfect Dark on a pre-release, to the point where I actually wrote about in somebody's leaving book at school how excited I was, and that exists somewhere now. That thing I wrote down, like, should pre-release in 3 days, I can't wait. So and it was quite underwhelming as a game, if I'm honest. I played it the other day, wasn't that excited. GoldenEye's way better. Right, let's move on to the next section. Cherie, can you sing us in?
Unpopular opinions, let your head unfurl. Laptops, tablets, entertainment, we're gonna burn it all. Unpopular opinions.
Samuel, sing it.
Unpopular opinions. You really caught me off guard there.
The idea is keep off guard. Sometimes people do it, very rarely. You just did it. I'm so happy.
Yeah, I can't sing.
Yeah, I feel satisfied.
Yeah.
Good, good. Wow, there you go. Now that I'll never recover from that, shall you move on to what the unpopular opinion actually is, Gareth?
Yes, I mean, you could have segued yourself, but I like the fact that we're signposting this.
Well, a bit of a back and forth, you know, just keep the keep the listener interested.
Absolute banter, absolute.
My unpopular opinion is you can never have enough Star Wars. And I say this because the Disney investor call, they announced a whole bunch of stuff. They reveal more information about the Obi-Wan Kenobi TV series, which will feature Hayden Christensen reprising his role as Darth Vader, which for some reason some people are excited about. I don't know why, even though those prequels are terrible.
Darth Vader?
Yeah, I mean, Anakin Skywalker, I don't know.
I mean, like, when he's just like, you know what? These younglings are going to get it. Listen, that spoke volumes to me. But again, maybe that's that 80s baby desensitization. I don't know.
Yeah. The younglings had to go because they were so irritating in that film. So I kind of see what he was going for. But yeah, I can't say I'm that excited about seeing Hayden Christensen in Star Wars again. But some people seem to be. So yeah. There was that, and there was a Cassian Andor TV show, which is connected to the Rogue One TV series. That's going to be 12 episodes long, and they showed off some images of that. Apparently has more than 200 named characters, so it's quite a big deal. They're filming that now, I believe, and there's more. There's a series called The Acolyte, I think. It's kind of a rumored to be a martial arts style series, but it's set in a different era of the Star Wars universe. There's a kind of anime anthology show. There's also going to be another animated series called The Bad Batch. There's going to be two Mandalorian spin-offs, one called Ahsoka and the other called Rangers of the New Republic. Ahsoka Tano was a very popular addition to The Mandalorian Season 2, played by Rosario Dawson. So a lot of people are excited to see where that goes next, including me. And then I saw some people on social media had the audacity to suggest that there's too much Star Wars in the works, and I'm not having it, frankly. And that's my unpopular opinion, Gareth.
I mean, there is too much Star Wars for two reasons.
How dare you?
One, I don't care about Star Wars. Never have. Just watched it, wasn't bothered, carry on with that. I appreciate other people do. And for those other people, I feel like this is ruining it. You need that kind of sanctity of like the big release. It's like football, which we'll all understand. The idea that if you put football on all the time, those big games just take less meaning. You know, there's too much football.
But there's 38 games a year in football. That is all the time.
Well, that's 38 games, plus the League Cup, plus the Champions League, plus the qualifiers, plus the Nations League, plus the internationals. And there's like, well, now it's football all the time. It loses its kind of like, oh, I can't wait for the big game because they're literally all the time. And it's the same with Star Wars. You know, we don't need all this backstory and stuff. Or they need to at least stretch it out over a longer period of time so you don't feel like you're inundated and lose interest.
How dare you, sir, frankly?
I mean, I appreciate that we are moving away from the Skywalker saga, like, for the most part. Like, I think now that Disney's done whatever they've just ran it into the ground, I think we need to take a break from that, like 10, 15 years. But I am all for getting stories, like, especially Ahsoka. She has been my favorite character since Clone Wars, and I was dying for some live action. They gave me just what I wanted, and if they could keep that going, I am going to be there for that and even more. I want to see different parts of the world, because it's such a vibrant, diverse world, and for so long we've just been glued to these particular characters. I think it's going to be fun to be able to meet new heroes and heroines and baddies and things of that nature, because personally I would like to have a General Grievous origin story thing going on. He was one of my favorite villains in the Clone Wars, and I just want to know how he got that way.
But this is clearly just, I mean, forgive me if I'm just making a sweeping generalization about something I don't know about, but surely this is just Disney trying to monetize a franchise and, like I said, doubling down on the IP, as Samuel said in inverted commas, to the point where it just becomes another Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, and that's kind of the all the time forever. That's not what Star Wars should be.
I don't think they're going to be explicitly connected in the same way that the MCU is, though.
Not explicitly connected, but they are still part of the same world, so that you can keep, every time something happens, it's to do with that same origin in your own mind of, like, why you love it. You'll instantly absorb it because it's Star Wars.
Yeah, I feel like most of it will be able to be enjoyed individually, though, with the possible exception of the Mandalorian spin-offs, which seem to tie directly into, obviously, the main show. I don't know. I don't think that you have to watch all of it, is the thing. Like, there is a lot of it, I agree. It's a lot for any series. And clearly they've looked at the success of The Mandalorian and gone, well, that's what people want right now, more than The Rise of Skywalker, which surely most people can agree was a terrible film. Maybe not Reddit. I don't know. But yeah, that's my take, Gareth. Star Wars is good, but you don't have to watch all of it.
Liv, final thoughts on this? Is it good or bad opinion?
I don't know, I kind of agree that you can have too much of a good thing. Like, this year there was like 3 series of RuPaul's Drag Race back to back, and like, obviously I was going to watch them, but it did feel like a bit of a slog. And also I feel like you can kind of like ruin things by like doing like non-canon things. So like, for example, I love Harry Potter a lot, and like sometimes I'm surprised to find out things, you know, like that J.K. Rowling's written on like the Pottermore website, which is now part of the story but never was before. And it's kind of, sometimes you just want to imagine, like, maybe this happened before, you know, the movie that I've seen, or maybe this happens after the characters, and you don't always need everything to be wrapped up.
If it's not canon, then does it count? And therefore people will feel annoyed at having watched it and tried to invest in the thing that they love.
I don't know.
I think Star Wars and RuPaul's Drag Race are basically the same thing, so it's an apt comparison, you know.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was giving Samuel the space to jump in with the same point. I mean, they're both basically the same as the MCU, so ultimately your point absolutely stands. Right, we are nearly at the end of this podcast. All right, it is whooped along again. Every time I am told by our producer that we need to keep it under 50 minutes, and I am just about to ruin that. 2 things there. I made that up. He's never told me we have to keep it down below, and this will probably get edited out. Boom, shank. Right, Samuel. I just realised it was nonsense, so have fun with that, Matt. Samuel, have you had a good time today on this podcast?
Wow, is that what you do at the end of the podcast? You ask, did you enjoy the thing that just happened? I mean, the answer is yes, Gareth. Yes, I had a great time.
Well, I'm now going to follow up questions like, how would you have ended the podcast then if you're such a good podcaster, which you are, Backpage Pod?
I would have continued the thread you went down there about the producer and said, actually, my producer's never said that. In fact, he's been dead for 5 years and really kind of gone dark with it.
But now we have to keep that bit in. And it's going to look real.
I'll just say the bit again. Why don't you just ask me, have you had a good time? And I'll say, yes, I have, Gareth.
No, we're keeping the whole thing in. Liv, have you had a good time?
Yes.
thank you, perfect guest. You're wonderful. Cherie.
You know I did. You know, I live for these times when I get to talk to you and like my Tech Radar people and sometimes my laptop people and my TG folks.
Out of 10, what would you give the podcast? I'm going to really double down on really analyzing what we've done.
I mean, I'm always going to say it's a 10 out of 10.
True. Thank you very much. And I appreciate that. If people want to get in contact with you, Cherie, I felt they could do that somehow.
Yes, they can do that on Twitter or Instagram at MissSmith11. That is MissSmith11. And of course, Laptop Mag, we've got a whole bunch of end of year content just waiting to be read and loved and adored. And maybe you'll buy some things. Maybe you'll laugh. Maybe you'll cry. But either way, laptop then, laptop now, and laptop forever.
Samuel, follow that. How can people get in contact with you?
They can tweet me at Samuel W. Roberts, although I don't recommend following me on Twitter. It's just not worth it.
Disagree. Samuel is a rollickingly good listen. Listen, read, Twitter, follow, whatever, yeah. Olivia, I forgot your name.
Wow! How?
No, I didn't forget it. My brain was like, "Say Olivia." The part of my brain was like, "No, that's not professional enough." Say Olivia. I was like, "Why would I be professional?" And then we got to where we got to.
You've literally never called me Olivia anyway, so
that's because in the corner of your call on the meet that we've got going on, so we can all see each other, it says Olivia, and it messed with my brain.
Sure, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Olivia Tambini.
And would they find excellent content on Instagram, such as great musical capabilities and lovely ink art?
For God's sake. Yes.
Oh, look at her blushing!
I do some stuff on there for fun. I'm not professional, so don't get excited.
Cool. I'm being Gareth Beavis. You can follow me on Twitter as SuperBeav. We've got Tech Radar on all the socials under, helpfully, just Tech Radar. Although Twitch, we messed up and I can't even remember what our handle is for that. I don't think we've used it, so that's fine. Please do follow us. We are also planning loads of good content, but we're focusing hard on that bit between Christmas and New Year, where we're going to put all of our lovely content for you to read. Great features, great things to wrap up the year, great looks forward to the next year coming. So once you've had all of your turkey and you are very tired and just want to mess about on your phone, just browse Tech Radar. You'll have a great time. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us. It's lovely to have you here, Samuel.
Thank you for having me, Gareth. It's been a delight.
Yep. Out of 10, how was it?
It was a 9, but then you made me sing, so I went down to a 7.
What's brilliant is Liv's walked out of way from her microphone, but she's got her headphones on so that we can hear everything. We are absolutely keeping this. There's no doubt this is staying in, even though Liv thinks she's got away with
Sorry.
It's all right. We're keeping all that in because we can hear you perfectly fine.
Oh no, I meant to turn off the microphone. It went wrong.
All the best podcasts end that way. It's fine.
Exactly. So Liv, just sign us off with one more line. Go.
Get jiggy with it.
Na 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 na.
No, no,
bye
no,
everyone.
No,
thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.